When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Welcome to another podcast at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by our friends at Madison Teamsters, Local 695, Madison Firefighters, Local 311, and Madison Teachers Incorporated. Joining us now, one of the candidates for school board running in April 2nd election, the general election, Chris Carusi. She is a mother of children that go to Madison Memorial High School and a longtime advocate for public schools. Chris, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks, Sly. It's great to be here.
All right. Tell us a little bit about yourself and why on earth you would want to be on the school board, considering everything that's happened over the last few months.
As you said, I'm a parent. I have two kids in the school district, and I started going to school board meetings before my kids even started kindergarten because I was passionate about bringing 4K to the Madison School District. I just kept going to school board meetings. It's been a dozen years now, and I have advocated for positive change in the district, and I'm ready to bring that experience to the board.
And what have you done career-wise you think that would fit in well with being somebody that can manage a huge budget in a school board?
So my current position is at the Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems at UW-Madison. I am the Associate Director of Communications there. I manage a pretty large budget. I've also been the executive director of a nonprofit organization. And, you know, sustainable agriculture might sound like kind of an odd fit for education, but actually I spend a great deal of my time working with people who might have different viewpoints on different issues and trying to find common ground and move forward. So
I have never heard of people so negative when they're talking about the problems at Madison schools from all different perspectives. I've never heard more angst, more anger, but more importantly, less hope. I've lived here almost all my life, and I've never seen anything like what's going on right now. Your thoughts on that?
I'm likewise hearing a lot of frustration from both parents and staff. I've been out knocking on a lot of doors for this election, and a lot of parents in the district are frustrated both by equity issues that we're facing. I think pretty much everybody in this district wants to see the achievement gap improve. And at the same time, there's a lot of concern about behaviors in the hallways, behaviors in the classrooms. I'm hearing a lot of concern from parents and from staff. I'm hearing that they would like more say in what goes on in their classrooms. And there's their frustration has a lot to do with autonomy and the respect that's given to their profession.
So, and obviously Act 10 was a big factor in that. I see the achievement gap, and I was looking at the story in the Wisconsin State Journal. Is the achievement gap wider in Madison because the white students are doing so exceptionally well compared to some other districts? In other words, is part of the achievement gap not necessarily a negative?
I don't think I would take it that far. It's a lot more nuanced than that. I think, there is no district that has solved the achievement gap anywhere in the U.S., to the best of my knowledge. But there are districts where, particularly African-American kids, are performing much better than they are in Madison. So regardless of the degree of that gap, if you look at the performance of African-American kids and, to a lesser degree, Latinx kids in our district, we could be doing better.
Mayor Soglin has talked to me about the fact that at one time there were a fair amount of African-Americans making a decent living in Madison who lost their jobs when the General Motors plant closed and some other factory shuttered, partly because of trade and other issues. And that really destabilized the African-American population in Dane County. Do you think that that's one of the problems that's going on right now?
Absolutely. And I think it's broader than that. Economic inequality and the growing wealth gap in our country and in our community is absolutely putting people behind, and we know that it affects the African-American community more than other communities.
So how can schools overcome? Schools don't operate in a vacuum. How can schools overcome kids that are coming to class every day that have gone through trauma and very unstable situations? How can schools overcome that?
we need to acknowledge that we have a lot of kids in our school district who are facing trauma due to forces that are well beyond our schools. But at the same time, our society has said schools are the entity that is responsible for helping kids. And as a society, I think it's our obligation to invest in helping children. We need to make sure that kids have, social workers and psychologists and counselors and nurses in the schools who can provide them the support they need. We need to keep class sizes small enough so that teachers can reach out to kids and understand what's going on in their lives. We need to do a better job of providing mental health support to kids who need it, as well as academic interventions for kids who need them. That's really how we're going to, public education is our best hope for eventually solving this economic inequality gap by making sure all kids have a good start at being able to contribute to our future society. So we need to invest in public education.
All right, let's talk about the contrast. Chris Carusi with us at SliceOffice.com. The contrast between you and your opponent, Kaleem Kerr. He obviously was an advocate for opening a charter school. He still operates a school in some way, shape, or form. It's a little gray for me. I don't quite understand exactly what he's doing right now. But do you think if he were to be on the school board, he has a conflict of interest?
We're seeing this in Milwaukee that charter schools and voucher schools are competing with public schools for students and for staff and for principals. So I think to serve on a school board that is competing with your own school for those resources is a concern.
And you said in the article that you both have the same goals, but you want to get there in a different way. Explain.
So, Kaleem and I think both are very passionate about educational equity. How we get there, I think we both have very different visions. We've had decades of school reform under the No Child Left Behind Act, followed by the Every Student Succeeds Act, that have expanded privatization of public schools. They have demeaned the teaching profession, and they've unfairly labeled children in schools as failing. And the recent strikes we've seen in Los Angeles and Oakland and Denver have been teachers not just standing up for their pay, but standing up to push back against these reforms, to fight for justice, and to they're asking for things like smaller class sizes, more support staff, limits on charter school and voucher school expansion. My vision for moving forward is a very similar vision. We need to invest in those kind of things. We need to ensure that every local neighborhood school is giving every child a really great education. We need to invest in every child, every day, in every school if we're going to be able to move forward as a society. Kaleem is talking more about opening new schools. And he's referred several times in his literature to reforms. And, my feeling is that those reforms aren't working and we need to move in a different direction.
Let's talk a little bit about the flashpoint with police in schools. It's almost become something, it's almost like a Rorschach test in how people view Madison and view the Madison Police Department. Let's talk about the actual function of police in schools. Now, you said eventually you'd like there to be a day that there aren't police in schools. But I ask you this, because I think that whenever you have a gun-free zone, as schools are, I think having a police officer in this day and age isn't just there to protect peace and tranquility within the school, but to protect the school from outside forces. How can, in the world in which we live in, however you feel about guns, America is awash with guns, and America is awash with violent people. How could we ever say that a school would be secure without having a police officer?
If you look at the school shootings that we've had over time, there have been armed police officers in some of those schools who haven't been able to stop the situation. I think, while I would not end the contract with the Madison Police at this point in time, I think it's really important to acknowledge that we need to prevent these situations from happening, not just hope that an armed policeman can stop them if they do happen. And the prevention is about taking care of kids early. It's about, again, providing mental health services for kids who need them. It's about teachers having small enough class sizes to have relationships with all the children in the class and know what's going on in their lives, to be able to, if a child is troubled, to be able to reach out to them and hopefully prevent problems before they happen.
Well, you're in the schools. How are the police performing right now? Say, and I'll pick your school, Madison Memorial.
I believe that the new contract, the new ERO contract that is pending, is going to further improve the training and capacity of police to work with children in our schools. We're asking for more training in working with kids with disabilities, for example. I think it is better to have police in our schools who are trained to work with youth, who have relationships with those youth, than to potentially have more calls to police who do not have the training and do not have mm-hmm. that relationship and may just be coming in to make an arrest.
What would be your, I know this sounds rapid fire here, I'm throwing one question at you after another. What's the lesson learned from what happened at Whitehorse Middle School?
The lesson learned is that that situation never should have happened, and we need to sit down and figure out what factors made it happen. I think we had a child who was not getting the support she needs from the system, and we had a teacher who was under a great deal of stress. How do we make sure that everybody's getting the support that they need, and how do we make sure that our schools are less stressful environments so situations like that don't happen?
Well, let me back up. In what way was the child not receiving the support that they needed?
We had a child with an IEP, and it sounded like, from reading the police report, she was returned to class when she was not ready to be in class, and she might have needed some more out of class support to be able to, before she could go back and be ready to learn.
Pardon my ignorance. What's an IEP?
Oh, an IEP is it's the plan that is given to students with disabilities that spells out mm-hmm. like the special services that they receive.
How in the future do we deal with school board meetings where they're having to move the meetings to close quarters because a group of protesters is disrupting the meeting? How do we deal with that?
Well, first, we have to stop moving our meetings to close quarters because our meetings need to be open and democratic. Everybody needs to be at the table. Everybody needs to be in the room when the board is making decisions that affect our community. With the situation we're facing right now, I am hopeful that there might be a way to possibly get an outside facilitator to come in and work with all the parties involved and try to find some common ground so that we can move forward with open meetings for the district that are not disrupted to the point where we have to shut them down.
Boy, I've watched these meetings. it would be like trying to bring peace to the Middle East. I mean, I guess my jaw has dropped at a couple of moments watching that. It's disconcerting. It actually just makes me sad, is what it does. I hope you can help make progress in that area, because right now it every time they adjourn or they go move to private quarters, it seems as though we literally don't have a functioning democracy. Let me ask you finally here as we kind of wrap this up. Your goal for the next 3 years, if you were to be elected to the school board, what's your number one priority going to be?
My number one priority is to focus on funding and policy for strategies that will improve learning conditions in our classrooms and working conditions for our staff. So again, we've got increasing class sizes in the Madison School District, trying to get those class sizes under control so kids can learn better and teachers can have more reasonable teaching loads. I would like to ensure that our teachers have more say in the classroom. We do need to focus on bringing in more teachers of color, and we need to focus on trying to retain experienced teachers in the district. Since 2010, the number of staff in our district who are leaving before they actually reach retirement age has quintupled, and we need to figure out why that is going on and create the working conditions so that we can keep experienced teachers in the classroom, because we know experienced teachers lead to better outcomes for kids.
I understand her contract rolled over, but if you had your druthers, would you like to see Madison pick a different school superintendent?
Oh, that's a loaded question. I would at least like to have a serious conversation about leadership in our district and where we want to head with leadership, and also about accountability. The superintendent is accountable to the board is accountable to the citizens who elect them, and we need to make sure that chain of accountability is functioning in a healthy way and that everybody in leadership in our district clearly understands their roles as leaders.
Chris Carusi, school board, election, April 2nd, get out and vote. probably a vote that is extremely important, not only for the future of the school district, but the city overall. And thanks for running.
Thank you, Sly. I appreciate your talking with me.
All right. Thank you.
Similar to a well-tuned automobile, a guitar requires the same level of attention to perform at its very best. No matter how expensive your guitar may be, we will treat you and your instrument with the utmost respect. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson, we love guitars.
Welcome back to Sly's Office.com, brought to you by our friends at Madison Computer Works, also our friends at Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson. Joining us now is T.J. Mertz. He's a member of the Madison School Board running for re-election. T.J., when did you first get elected?
I got elected in 2013, so I've been on the board for 6 years, and I'm trying for three more.
After watching what's transpired over the last few months, why would you want to continue this torture?
Well, you know, it's been a very, very difficult time to be a board member. It's been especially a difficult time to be an incumbent running for re-election. But I think the district's going in the wrong direction in some pretty key areas, and I think that my commitments, my experience, my knowledge and my values are needed more than ever.
So there's the overall problem with the school district and the achievement gap and discipline and a variety of issues. And then there's how the school district runs and transparency. So what are your goals for the next 3 years to try to fix those problems?
Well, I think that they're all very, very much related. I think that, you know, public education means that the public is involved. And when you aren't honest and open and forthcoming with how you're doing business, where your failures are, where your successes are, and you cut off the public. So we need to be more open. And we need to be more open also because if we want to bring in the skills and knowledge and experiences of our community, we have to be trusting of them. We have to trust them with information. We have to trust them listening to their ideas. Trust is a two-way street, and if we want the trust of our community, we have to trust our community to be part of it. So I think that, you know, I kind of point to what we did with the ERO, the Police and Schools Ad Hoc Committee, as a model for what we should be doing more of. And in that case, you know, we have a very contentious, difficult issue without real easy solutions. But what we did was, you know, we brought in nine community members, three board members. We sat down at a table with each other for 16 months, I think it was. People did their research. We talked to hundreds of people in the community. We looked at what was going on in other districts around the country. And we sat face to face and we talked through these issues. And we came up with what we thought were the best recommendations. And we drew upon, you know, it was a diverse group, and when it came time to draft the final recommendations, it wasn't administrators sitting there from the outside drafting those, but it was four members of the committee, diverse members, Barbara Harrington Committee, and all Barbara Harrington McKinney and Alder, Justice Castaneda, Pio Condar, and myself sat down at a table and wrote these based on what we'd heard from the other committee members and what we'd heard from our community. And they're strong, good recommendations. And, you know, that's the kind of model we have to have with things like family involvement, with academic achievement issues, with attendance issues, with behavioral issues. It has to be an open process, and we have to bring people to the table with us and respect them. You treat people with respect, they treat you with respect.
All right. And what is the compromise on having police in schools?
Well, I don't think, you know, compromise is, you know, I think that I prefer kind of just say, what's the best solution? One of the things is that whether you like it or not, and, you know, and there are people for good reasons don't want police in schools, there will be police in our schools. We know that from experience. We know that they will be called into our schools. We also know that a recent state law requires our staff, under penalty of being fined, to call the police directly if there is a significant threat to safety. So the police will be in our schools. So for myself, that moves me to the question, well, how do I want the police in schools? And through a contractual relationship, we can have police in our schools who receive training, which is mandated by the contract. We can have police and schools who have reporting requirements mandated by the contract. We can have police and schools where there's an open complaint procedure, where there's an where there's community oversight of annual reporting on things. And so, and we can also better define that line between what is school discipline and what is a criminal matter.
And can
so
we
all those things we can do all those things we can do through a contract that we can't do if we end the program. So,
can,
you know, I mean, so that was what the committee recommended. That's been the basis of our negotiations with the city, which are still ongoing. And, you know, additionally, there's some internal policies which we're in the process of changing to reflect the recommendations of the committee. It was good work, good people doing good work.
And can we do that within the structure of police officers having their collective bargaining rights and their rights as employees?
There is nothing that we recommended that infringes upon that. Nothing. That was kind of a red herring that was thrown out there. We're not asking for the power to dismiss people from their positions. We are trying to work out something where we can, where if there is an issue in the school with the school in the school with an officer, where the district can say this officer is no longer in the school, either in a temporary or a permanent basis. I think that, you know, that one of the, you know, we have a lot of complex issues going on in our district, but the White Horse issue, one of the things was that as soon as that happened, we could remove that person from that situation. With a police, had it been a police officer, we would not be able to do that unless the police chief cooperated. And, you know, the odds are the police chief would cooperate, but I'd rather not go with just the odds.
Right.
I'd rather be able to say it. And again, you know, as I've, you know, and we're in the middle of negotiations here, and, you know, it's usually, I don't believe in negotiating in the media.
Right.
But, you know, to the extent possible, I think that we should be able to find a way to meet the needs of, you know, we control who's in our buildings, who's interacting with our students, especially when there is a difficult situation that has occurred, and completely respecting the power of both the union contract and the police chief. I think that's doable. I really hope it's doable.
Right. Tell me about these meetings that have been disrupted and what you think the long-term solution on that is. The board can't keep going into closed session and voting. That obviously doesn't fit with how we do government in Wisconsin or how we should. So what's the long-term solution on that?
You know, I think that rebuilding trust, and there's some people who we can never rebuild trust with, but I think that if we have wider efforts at rebuilding trust with other people in the community, that the support for these disruptions will wither. And so I think that that's part of it. It's been very difficult. Just to note that we have not been going into closed session. We've been following the law in that, you know, our proceedings have to be available. We've, you know, so when we go, I call it the bunker. When we go into the bunker.
Is it Dick Cheney's bunker?
You know, it's not good, Sly. It's not good. But when we go into the bunker, we stream our meeting to the public.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, again, this is not good. But I just want to make it to note that we are continuing to follow open meetings laws in that manner. It's not the best way to follow them. You know, I've been arrested for protesting. So this has been really hard for me. You know, I've never disrupted a government meeting, and I've thought long and hard about, you know, under what circumstances would I be either supportive or willing to participate in disrupting a government meeting. And the one is that if the process is so corrupt that it ceases to have legitimacy, that this is not the case of what we've been doing at all. In fact, with the ERO committee, I think our processes are some of the best processes the district's done in years. And the other is that if the outcome is so heinous as to be, you know, something that just must be disrupted no matter what. In this case, I can't agree with that either. If you look at, you know, the latest figures we have, you know, there were less than 40 arrests last year. We're moving in the right direction on issues of police and schools. You know, again, this has been difficult for me because,
right.
Again, you know, I mean, I was arrested for singing in the Capitol.
So you've been through it.
Let me ask you about the district. My earliest memories are of open housing marches. So, you know, I've been protesting since I was 3 years old.
Well, there you go. You got me beat. Let me ask you about transparency in the district and the board not being properly notified. The latest has to do with Leopold School. Tell me what's going on.
You know, one of the things is that the board has been reluctant to assert itself in decision making, particularly around budgetary matters, but other matters. And so one of the issues with transparency is what actually comes before the board, because if something comes before the board, then it becomes something that comes before the public. In the case of school-level staffing, since I've been on the board, I mean, I was talking about this in 2013, how we staff our schools, the process around that needs to be transparent and inclusive. We have formulas, but the formulas become black boxes. And so, you know, and the board has some influence and some say on what these formulas are, but the formulas themselves always are adjusted by humans, and that process needs to be, the board needs to be able to take a look during the budget process and say, okay, this is what our formula put into the schools, this is what we're hearing from the schools about these, what kind of adjustments can we make? Right now it's a black box. I cannot tell you what the staffing of our schools will be for next year, even though the budget will come out in less than a month. And I will not have that information when that budget comes out. I will not have that information when it's time to make amendments to the budget. I will not have that information when it comes time to pass the budget. In fact, the board just got the information for the current school year, just in February, for the current school year. You know, how many months in the school year? I pushed back against this for 6 years. The majority of the board has said that, you know, no, just let the administration handle it. This is micromanaging. This is that. This is this. You know, I think that 90% of the time the administration gets it right, but I do think that there's special circumstances. There are other cases where the board needs to be aware and have the opportunity to step in and change things.
Well, is any of this codified into law? I mean, is the administration following the law, or is this something that needs to be changed?
You know, in terms of it, you know, all state statutes give all power to the Board of Education, period. I mean, just, you know, as long as you don't violate state or federal law, it's within the power of the board. The board can choose not to exercise those powers and allow the administration to do things without board votes if that's what they want to do, and that's been the case. So in that sense, they're following the law because the majority of the board does not want to exercise this power. Or has not joined, you know, majority has not joined me in trying to change it.
Do you think that you're being, I'm a little surprised you're being challenged. Do you think you're being challenged because you've rocked the boat?
That's one of the reasons. I bring out the inconvenient truths. I make things uncomfortable for people. I push people. And I think that's one of the reasons. I mean, it certainly is. You know, I don't believe in going along to get along. I certainly, you know, I understand that you need four votes to get anything done. And, you know, as I say, I've passed more budget amendments, more policy amendments, and more partnership agreement amendments than any other board member. So I can work with people and get to four votes, and I can also work with people in our community. And, you know, things like the middle school start time, things like the ERO contract. I don't just go along to get along.
Well, that's why you're there. I kind of view you as the school board's Russ Feingold, the guy that asks the tough questions, right?
One of the things that really hit me a couple of years ago, we had a kind of a crisis at one of our schools, and I was in a meeting with parents and a couple administrators, and another board member was present also. And what hit me was that the parents were asking harder questions than most of the school board, and even more importantly, they weren't accepting the pat answers. And they were pushing, pushing, pushing. And I realized that, you know, that in some ways, you know, I mean, my game's always been good, but I upped my game after that one. I was like, you know what? I'm, you know, the parents aren't at the table here. I'm at the table. I need to be there. And similar things with staff, you know, and one of the problems in our big problems in our district is that, you know, that we have a huge retention and morale problem with our staff. And, you know, there are, I have the trust of a lot of staff who will tell me about situations that are happening in confidence because they don't feel secure enough to come forward and talk about it.
Well, let me ask you one final question. The time flies by here, but
it does.
John Matthews told me years ago that he sure wishes they would pick a superintendent, someone like the late Bruce Dahman, who was the principal at Memorial, someone who knows Madison, someone who's rooted here, somebody who gets teachers, who's been a teacher, somebody grounded in this community. You think it's time for someone, obviously Bruce passed away, but is it time for someone like that to lead this district?
You know, leadership, I'm going to kind of take a slight pass on that one, but I will say is that okay. Whoever's leading the district, and that includes the Board of Education, needs to respect the people who've been working for educational improvement in Madison for years and the knowledge and experience of in our community that includes our educators. You know, you reinvent the wheel. You have people fly in from Oakland or Harvard. These are not in and of our community. They don't know the past. Sometimes, you know, you have a consultant. They'll come forward with a proposal, and I'll say, yeah, we tried that 7 years ago. It was an abject failure.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things is that you know, that with turnover both in the Doyle building, in our principalships, and on the Board of Education, there's not that sense of history.
Right.
I've been attending Board of Education meetings since, I think, 2005, 2006. And, you know, and also I have relationships with a lot of educators in the district who, you know, if something comes up, you know, I can check in with them and go, you know, I seem to remember we did something like that. And they will, you know, we'll talk about it and we'll figure out what worked and what didn't work. But we definitely need to be more organic. We need to be more drawing about, you know, we have so much knowledge, skills and experience within our community. Again, I'll point to the ERO committee. The people we brought to that table were amazing.
All right.
And they worked hard, and they took it seriously because they care about our schools. This is their community. A lot different than when someone flies in from Oakland.
TJ Mertz, candidate for school board. I strongly recommend you be retained in your job. I hope you win on April 2nd, and everybody needs to get out and vote. Thanks for coming on the show.
Appreciate the opportunity and appreciate the support, Sly. You have a good day.
You too.
Slysoffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.